Hello, readers. This is a podcast. This episode's about books.
Books, y'all.
I'm Mike Buongiorno. This is PCMC. I'm here once again with Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
Yes. Anthony, this was your idea for an episode.
It was.
What is it?
So I'll explain. So my idea was five books that have changed our lives.
Whoa.
And by that, my idea was not coming up with a fancy schmancy list to try to make us look smart.
Which I struggled not doing.
No, me too. But no Crying of Law 49, no Infinite Jest. No, we're not trying to impress anyone.
I've got one that's kind of, but it did change my life.
I want to be honest and talk about books that had a huge impact on us. And I was thinking from childhood to adulthood.
Well, here's my thing. We decided that we'd both pick five in no particular order.
Right.
And two out of my five are kids books.
One out of my five is a kids book, and another one is a adult book that I read as a kid, and that's part of why I chose it. So I'm right there with you.
But then I picked the two, and I was like, well, now I look like an illiterate person who doesn't read.
No, because it changed the trajectory of your life, because when you were a kid, you read that book, and it had a profound impact on you.
But I want to impress the listener, and I want them to know that I read books.
Don't worry about it.
Guys, follow me on Goodreads. Mike Buongiorno. I'm on Goodreads. You can see that I read books. I didn't quite make last year's Goodreads goal. You know,
what was your goal?
It was like 50, and I missed it. But usually, I go over my goal.
That's a lot. You do.
Not
you,
a brag.
You. I feel like you.
I think a book. If you read every night, you can read a book a week.
Yeah, but that's if you read every night.
Which I used to be better at.
I used to be better at. I feel like, and this is just because we're brothers and we know each other very well. I feel like I was a reader before you were an avid reader.
No, yeah, it wasn't
but
avid reader until
like
I was older.
But I feel like you surpassed me. Like, I feel like because you discovered it, like the pleasure of reading later in life, you've zoomed past me in quantity. Like, you've read way more books than I've read at this point. I gifted you your first Kindle, and it changed your life.
I still have it, but it did change my life. Well, here's I'm going to say you're probably wrong with that. Probably over your lifetime, you've still read more than me.
But you read much.
I probably read more than you now.
I feel like you're a voracious reader. Like, you read, or right now you're going through a slump, you said.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But you read more often than I do now.
Well, not to bring it back to what we were talking about in last week's episode with mental health, but I never had the concentration to read, and then that made me feel insecure and like, oh, maybe I'm a dummy who doesn't know how to read or like to read and stuff. But then when I got on proper medication, and proper dosage, and I became much more stable, all of a sudden I could read, and I discovered the joy of reading. And I think that's not a coincidence. I think the reason why I was always bored with reading or couldn't keep reading a book, I would read a few pages and then like couldn't keep going, was I didn't have the concentration.
Okay.
Where now that I'm highly medicated on all sorts of cocktails of anti-depressions and anti-anxiety.
Well, or you could not let go of your thoughts for long enough to be fully
right
immersed in a book.
Right.
Which is shame, because I feel like reading of all the pastimes is the most immersive.
Right.
You really lose yourself.
I think that's why I like it so much. I feel like it's a form of meditation.
Yeah, it is. And I've read apparently like just 6 minutes of uninterrupted reading a day can like it has like wonderful benefits for your blood pressure your brain chemistry and everything.
I'm happier when I'm reading a lot because it's like I'm meditating. It's like giving my brain
a
break from – right, because
– what you have is all mental illnesses are on some level they're thinking problems.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The problem is that people who have mental illness –
you can't think away a problem.
You try to think your way out of a thinking problem.
Right.
And so the paradoxical key is to try to take breaks from thinking, which feels counterintuitive.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, right. But it does, because then like it, almost like when you wake up from a good night's sleep, like after you've read a lot, you'll just feel fresher in your mind.
Yeah, there's a clarity.
That's why I used to love and I haven't done this in a really long time. I used to love to like take a weekend day and go, you know what? I'm going to read a whole book today.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that in so long, but those were so good for me.
You know what's hard? I will say nowadays, I feel like I think back to when I was a kid and I think back to when I used to read for long interrupted periods or even watch TV or watch a movie for long interrupted periods without looking at a phone or anything because that stuff didn't exist. And God, I always feel like I haven't experienced that in a really long time because just every 2 seconds I'm checking my phone or something.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I was thinking to myself recently as 2019 ended and I failed my Goodread goal, I said, well, what the fuck happened this year? And I think I'm more addicted to my phone than ever.
Yeah, me too. That's why I can't put
my goddamn.
I know.
And I find that when I read more successfully meaning more than 5 minutes, it's I leave my phone in the other room.
Yeah. Well, this is why I had this conversation with somebody the other day. This isn't even about reading. It's actually about like watching films.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I still love going to the movies is because it's one of the last. It's like still not appropriate to be on your phone in the movie theater.
You still do it.
You still do it, but like I feel like being in just, the movies in a dark room, it's like forces me to just watch it.
Right. Right, right, right.
Whereas, you know, people say like, oh, why are you going to the movies? You can watch it on Netflix. It's like, but I don't want to be in my house.
You're also more aware of that you're paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But anyway.
But, you know, the other thing that I think stops me from reading is I fall asleep so quickly.
Yeah, but that's my problem.
Like, and it's like... Sometimes it's like I read every night for a week and it's like I've read a paragraph a night. I've read the same page over. I don't know where the fuck I am anymore in this book. It's like I can't get any traction going.
Plus, as a teacher, like I'm always reading like a million things with my classes. So I feel like I do so much reading during the day that then at night when I'm in bed and I want to unwind and I want to read something for fun, it's like... I don't want to say it's the last thing I want to do, but I do feel like I immediately like fall asleep.
Yeah, I know.
It's not a treat anymore because like I read a chapter of Great Gatsby that day in class. I read The Raven that day. You know, like
right, okay.
I feel like I'm reading and I'm reading writing all the time. So during the school year, I do a lot more reading in the summer.
Yeah, and I always tell myself, so just read during the day. But I don't know. I'm more of a nighttime reader. I'm more of like you get in bed at night and you retire.
Because it's cozy.
I'm a retiring gentleman and I put on my smoking jacket and I'm like,
You smoke time. A cigar.
I've got my gold globe next to me and I'm like, it's time to read.
And the Kindle is a godsend. Seriously. Oh God, it is great. God bless the Kindle.
Oh, I have the Kindle Light.
Which is
great. Because you can turn off the lights.
Yeah, you're just totally in the dark.
And it doesn't fuck with your eyes like the way.
No, not at all. It doesn't hurt your eyes.
Right.
And it's so light and it just, oh man.
Oh, it's fantastic. You've got thousands of books on it.
Yeah.
Before we get into our list, are you reading anything right now?
Yeah. I'm reading, what am I reading? Oh, I'm reading Tuesdays with Maury.
How is that?
Which I've never read before. And it's a really quick read. Like, I just started it yesterday. I'm almost done with it. It's okay. It's everything you'd expect it to be. I'm actually reading it for work. I'm collaborating with another teacher who's teaching it and wants to do, like, a cross-curricular thing with me. And I never read it, but I agreed to work on the project with him. So cool. I'm reading it. It's good, you know. It's fine. It's exactly what you think it is.
Okay.
It's kind of like one of those books where like, you read the title and the back cover and you're like, I've read the book.
I got it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's enjoyable.
Okay.
And then my next book up in my queue is Dear Martin. It's a YA book.
Oh, I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's I think it's like a young black teen. He's teenager. He writes letters to Martin Luther King.
Oh, okay. Yes, I have heard of this.
And it's, you know, it's kind of like... one of those novels that got attention after The Hate U Give was a big success.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But anyway, that's what's up next.
But I always have a big pile.
TBR stack.
Yeah. And
so do I. I have so many books that I've never read that I own.
Right.
So I'm and I'll still go out and so get many of these new books ones. I've never read.
Yeah. But I also like, I can't go, this is going to be my next book. It's like, after I finish a book, it's kind of like, now what do I want? Like, now what's calling to me?
And that's the fun. That's part of the fun of it.
Yeah.
Are you a library person? Because I'm not. I'm a bookstore person.
I'm not. I'm sorry. I should be.
I know. I should be too. I'm a Barnes & Noble person. I'm not. I mean, just because we don't really live near any local bookshops, or else maybe I would be, but I'm not into that.
Yeah.
I love Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I like Barnes & Noble. You know what?
That is what it is.
Right now I'm reading a book called Disney's Land, which is about Disneyland.
That's cool.
All right. So do you want to get to our lists?
Sure. Now, you said we should do five and an honorable mention.
Yeah.
Do you want to start with the honorable mention, or do you want to leave that for the end?
No, typically you do the honorable mention before the first one.
Even though it's
one.
Lesser than the other ones. Oh, you mean like you count down and then you do the honorable mention before the...
Okay. As a way of teasing it.
Okay.
Although we're not going in any particular order,
except that I think each one of our last ones is supposed to be the most influential, we said.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. You go first.
Fuck. Where do I start? All right. This was the book that got me into reading as an adult, Eleanor and Park. It's a YA love story by the YA novelist.
The incomparable Rainbow Rowell. Is it Rowell?
Rowell, like Bowel.
I thought it was Rainbow Roll, like sushi.
No, Rowell.
Okay.
I'm not going to defend YA to you if you don't like YA.
You're just not down with the cause.
Yeah, like, who do you fucking think you are?
YA is where it's at now.
You'll go see a Marvel movie, but you're too good for YA. YA is...
We're living through a YA renaissance, we should say.
Yeah, it's funny. You go to Barnes & Noble, and the YA section is gigantic.
Because readers of all ages read YA now.
And authors that would have gone into adult contemporary...
Are going into YA.
Are going to YA.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't want to... I resent when people talk about YA or talk about animated shows and they go, it's so good. It's like not an animated show. It's like, no, it is that thing.
Right.
That thing can be good. Eleanor and Park is it takes place in the 80s, but not in an annoying way. not in a fucking Stranger Things way. Yeah, in a way that it actually...
In a cool way, like Paper Girls.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it does the thing that a lot of YA romances do, where each chapter rotates between the male's point of view and the female's. And they are two outcasts. Eleanor is a slightly overweight. We don't really ever know how overweight she is.
But
in her own mind, she's very overweight.
Yeah, I was going to say that's an insecurity of hers.
Right.
I don't think he ever refers to her as being overweight or fat.
He refers to her as... Because this is a rare book that I've read twice. And he refers to her as being like...
Bigger than him?
No, like it's like ice, like scoops of ice cream on top
so
of each
other. So she's like curvy?
Right, yeah. But he thinks she's beautiful. And she lives with her mom and her stepdad, who's very abusive, and her younger siblings. And they also are very economically challenged. And then Park is a, his mother is Korean and his father is... I don't know what his father is, but his father is not Asian. And
he's white.
Yes. And he is also a nerd. And they meet on the bus because he's reading an X-Men comic and she's reading it over his shoulder. And they both sort of like find solace in each other from the sort of struggles of being a teenager. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that, but... Of all the YA romances that I've read, I think it's the best because there's something about it where it's both very cute but doesn't feel manipulative.
It doesn't feel, in my opinion, it doesn't feel condescending. And that's
right.
the best thing about Rainbow Rowell's writing is that she writes with respect to teenagers. And you read that book and it really, you feel that sense of urgency that young people in relationships have.
Yeah.
Like if this relationship ends, my life is over.
Right,
but
right,
not
right.
in a condescending, like, you'll get over it one day kind of a thing.
Right,
way.
And it's also not, like, an adult imagining and projecting what they think a teenager is.
Right.
Like,
feels very authentic.
It feels very authentic, and the author has even obliquely made comments about it maybe being somewhat autobiographical.
Meaning, like, Eleanor is inspired by her.
Yeah. Which she doesn't talk about that a lot, but at one point the book was banned from a school library because aren't all good books? And it was something like... Because
it had some explicit
It was like too intense or something. Somebody said something like it's too intense and she said something like try living it or something.
That's interesting.
The YA author...
John Green.
John Green, who wrote Fault in Our Stars, who I don't think he's as good as an author as she is.
He's great. I mean, Fault in Our Stars is great.
He's good. But I like her better. And
yeah, I like her better too.
He wrote a review of it for the New York Times, and his review was really good. And he calls it haunting, which I think is a very good word for it because it is haunting in a way. It reminds you, it'll bring you back to that youthful urgency, like you said, where like it's so.
I love this person. I need to be with them so much.
My life is really over if it doesn't happen or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, you had told me to read that book.
Yes.
And I started to read it, and then I didn't finish. I only read maybe a chapter, and I didn't finish it. And then I went through, like I was saying, I stopped smoking weed, and I got onto medicine, and I was just becoming more healthy. And then I picked it up again, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And I'll never forget, I had a therapy session that I was reading it all day, and I was like right towards the end, and like it was getting to a very intense part, and then I had therapy, and it was like the most unproductive therapy because my mind was not there. Like I wanted to just leave and finish reading the book. And then I did read it again, which is something I've rarely done. And I've read, I used to say I've read all her books, but to be honest with you, she just put out a sequel to her book, Carry On, which is sort of like her.
The worst part of Fangirl.
It's like her fan fiction of Harry Potter. I don't know. She is a good writer. She's gone in some directions that I don't love. I guess it has to, you know, whatever.
You've read more of her than I have. I've read
everything except the second Carry On book. Really?
Yeah. You read Carry On?
Yeah.
God bless you. I would never. That was the part. I read Eleanor and Park. Loved it. Think that's her masterpiece to date.
It is. Absolutely
the best read, book. I read Fangirl, and I really loved it, except I hated the Carry On parts.
Yeah.
I read Kindred Spirits,
which is a short story.
Which is a short story based, that's a Star Wars story, right, kind of.
Two kids fall in love.
You
on
ordered
the
it
line.
From Amazon, and they accidentally sent you a whole case. Do
you
remember?
Yeah, yeah.
So I kept one, and I gave a bunch to my students.
Yeah, I got like 100 of them.
And then I read Pumpkinheads, which just came out. The graphic novel.
So
that's all
read
I've read.
Her two adult
I've never read
novels.
I tried reading Landline, and I didn't get into. I couldn't get into it.
I liked Landline a lot, and I liked her first book, Attachments, which is a lot like Who You Got Mail.
See, I love You've Got Mail, so maybe I should try it again.
Attachments is, it's from the point of view of. Oh, see if I can remember it. So it's Y2K is about to happen. It takes place in 1999. The male, he works in this office, and his job is to read through emails and to like look for certain things. You know, this was now that wouldn't be allowed. And he reads these emails between this woman and her friend, and he falls in love with her just based on reading her emails and her correspondence because he just like loves who she is. But he has no idea what she looks like.
Okay.
And she has a crush on a guy in the office, but she doesn't know anything about him other than she likes him. So it's like, it's more complicated than You Got Mail, because it's like, he doesn't know who she is, but knows her personality, and she doesn't know his personality, but knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cute. It's very interesting.
Okay.
But yeah, Eleanor and Park was a big one for me. It really, because after Eleanor and Park, I read Fangirl immediately. And then like I went on a tear of like, I read like 100 books in a row, where up until the point where I read Eleanor and Park, I had probably read 20 books in my whole life. And then from Eleanor and Park onward, I've read hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah. All right, awesome. So mine is...
Guys, I know how to read. That's the bottom line of what I'm trying to say is I know how to read.
You are literate. Mine's, I guess it's kind of a downer, although it is very inspiring as well. It is a memoir that won the Pulitzer Prize
La-dee-da.
In 2017. When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kranithi.
Oh.
It is.
Is this about the guy who died?
Yes. It was published posthumously. So yikes. He died before it came out.
Okay.
It's just one of the most beautifully written, powerful, moving, amazing books. Granted, I read it on an airplane, and I've heard that like you experience things in a heightened way on an airplane. But I read the entire thing on one flight.
Wow.
That's how good it was. And it's basically like this guy, and I feel like it truly changed my life because, not to be corny or whatever, but it really did make me like think about perspective. It's this guy who was a brain surgeon. And was like a young, ambitious physician. And basically he had like this promising future.
Yeah.
And then he develops a brain tumor and he goes from being doctor to patient.
Uh-huh.
And then it's all about how he, you know, as he's a surgeon, he knows that it's inoperable. He knows he's going to die. And then he gets to see what it's like to be a patient of his. So it's like, he talks about like little things that he never knew before. Like he talks about how he'd given IVs of saline thousands of times in his career. Yeah. But then the first time ever that he received one as a patient, he never realized that you could taste the salt in your mouth.
Oh,
when
wow.
they put it into your, you know, intravenously.
Wow.
And just little details like just that just make it really moving. Somebody going from, he's one of, it's like a, it's a beautiful irony in a way. And it's also like a tragic irony that he's like one of the few people who can operate on this type of tumor that he ends up having.
Wow.
But
it's also amazing because when you are sick, you put your trust in these people that you figure know more than you.
But then you
but
know.
But he knows all of it.
Exactly.
He knows every trick. He knows the truth.
Right.
He knows when they're bullshitting him.
Yes. And he knows that they're human.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's just beautifully written. And it's a beautiful story. And I was bawling when I read it.
Wow.
And I've read it again. And it was just as powerful the second time. I really would recommend it to anyone. I think it's a really good, it's a really, really great book.
Wow.
So that's When Breath Becomes Air.
Wow.
By Paul Krenithi.
I love it. Well, let's go to a children's book. This is
my next one is a children's book as well.
This is a book I read as a kid. But here's the weird thing. I have not been able to find this book anywhere or even anything written about it. Now, I think this week in doing preparation for this show, I found it and I ordered some stolen version from a library, but it hasn't come yet. So I'm going to give
What if you made it up?
Well, that's real. What I thought. I really did. But then I found this book, and I think this is it. But I'm going to give you an author, but I might get the book and be like, nah, this isn't it.
Okay.
How to Catch a Ghost by Stuart A. Callen. I read this when I was very, 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 very young. I'm going to say 8.
Okay.
And at the time, I thought it was a little book that literally was like How to Catch a Ghost. Like, and there's little things in it like, I remember it distinctly. It was like, put powder on the floor, and if you see somebody walking and there's no impression in the powder, that means it's really a ghost. And it's like little shit like that. But thinking about it now, it probably was cuter and funnier than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And it's certainly all illustrated. It was probably like 6 pages long.
Yeah.
You know, I love spooky shit, and the idea of it like being quote-unquote nonfiction in my brain and like teaching me like how to catch a ghost.
I feel like you had a lot of books like that when we were kids.
Well, I was obsessed with Ghostbusters. I was obsessed with the Warner Brothers film Quackbusters.
The occult.
I was obsessed with the occult. Yeah, I was obsessed with the idea of ghosts.
I feel like you had some spell books for kids.
Yeah, yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Shit
I remember
like that.
That stuff.
I wanted to be a Ghostbuster. I wanted to, after I saw Casper, I wanted to be Bill Pullman in that movie.
I still want to be Bill Pullman. Bill Paxton.
No, not him. So I was obsessed with this book, if it exists, which I think it does. I'll
that
let you know
really,
when it comes to me.
That sounds really cute.
But just go.
Was it a chapter book or is it like
no.
a really little kid's book?
It's a little kid's book. Huh. It may have had like 10 pages.
Huh, that's cute.
But it. By the way, I might also be remembering this all wrong. I might have the name wrong.
If it doesn't exist, then your memory of it, you should just write it then.
Yeah. But then what the fuck happened? Why? How did it not? What?
Maybe it's just.
Then I've got a problem.
It's inspired by something.
Just going by your premise for this episode, it totally captured my imagination in a way that I don't think any book had ever.
Okay.
Like, I thought of books as, like, I don't know how I thought of books as a child, but I was like, yeah, books. And then it was like, wow, this book is weird and funny and right up my alley of weird shit. All right,
cool.
How to Catch a Ghost, maybe, if it exists.
All right, so mine is a children's book as well. My next one is Harriet the Spy. By Louise Fitzhugh.
Now, I feel like I know a lot of writers who this was like a book
that's,
for them.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's a journalist, and this was like a huge book for her.
Yes. I always wanted to be a writer, and I just felt
like... You journal still, don't you?
Yeah, I still write. I mean, I write, I journal.
You're not a professional writer,
I'm not a professional writer, but I do consider myself to be a writer. I still write.
You write.
And I mean, I'm not a journalist either, but I do teach journalism. So I'm kind of like, am in that world, sort of. And it may be because of this book, because I loved it so much. And I just felt like Harriet was so much like me. And I even had like a private notebook, and I went out and I bought like, it was around the time the movie came out. I may have seen the movie first, then read the book, or maybe read the book in anticipation of the movie. I don't quite remember.
Who wrote the book?
Louise Fitzhugh. And there was a sequel that I read as well called The Long Secret. I went out and I bought like binoculars, and like I was like, I'm gonna be a spy, but really it was like I want to write. I want to.
It's interesting.
I want to write stuff. I want to be a writer, and I want to report on things.
Is, but
yes, but she says she's a spy.
Yeah.
And then she ends up writing for the school newspaper, and I remember when I was in elementary school, I was so inspired by that I started writing little columns that I would go. I'd write a little column and do a little illustration. I would go to the print shop and I would make copies of it for the whole class, and I would give it to my fifth grade teacher, and she would distribute them. And every Friday for a few weeks, we would just like all read them.
That's amazing.
So she really encouraged that. And that was really great too. She's actually still at that elementary school. I think she's the principal now. I should reach out to her and tell her that was great.
Did you read the book first or see the film
first? I don't remember. It was like simultaneous. Like the movie was definitely like coming out, and I read the book, or I saw the movie and then I read the book because I liked the movie so much. I don't remember which, but I do love the movie too.
Is it Michelle Trachtenberg?
Michelle Trachtenberg, yeah.
Yeah, Trachtenberg.
And there's since been a shitty like reboot.
Oh, really? There is?
It's like Blog War, Harriet the Spy, Blog Wars, and it's...
No, thanks.
Yeah, like a shitty Disney
movie. No, thank you.
So, yeah, that was a big, big one.
What other books has that author written?
I can't think of anything else that she's written besides those two.
Mm-hmm. Rosie O'Donnell's in the film.
She is. She's golly.
She certainly is.
It's also a very depressing children's book.
Doesn't she have a friend who's poor or something?
She has a friend who's poor. What she does is, through her spy work, she ends up having all of her friends and all the kids in the class turn on her. So she goes through a period where everybody hates her, and then she has to like regain their friendship. And so for a big portion of the movie and the book, it's a lot of her like being depressed and like experiencing the fallout of like all of her classmates, which happens a lot in elementary school. Like one day you're friends with people, and then all of a sudden they're all gang up on you.
Yeah.
So maybe I identified with that too, because I had that. I feel like everybody had that experience in elementary school, but I definitely had that experience where like I had these boys that were my friends, and then all of a sudden they were just like, "Hey, let's all hate Anthony."
Yeah.
And then it was like that. I went through that.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
Yeah. So that was a big one.
Wow. Okay, so this is the only one that's kind of pretentious.
Okay.
But I will be honest, where when I did read it, it didn't have a huge effect on me.
Atlas Shrugged.
No. it's even more pretentious.
Oh, God.
Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
You know what's so funny? I was going to say, I remember you reading that book and talking to me about it when you first read it.
Yeah.
You were like in 8th or 9th grade, right?
Yeah, I was in high school.
I don't think that's pretentious at all. I actually think that that's a big one that a lot of people cite as a life-changing book.
Right. It's, if you don't know it, Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor, and it's mostly a Holocaust memoir.
Yeah.
Although the second half of the book is sort of, he was a psychologist before the Holocaust. So the second half of the book is his kind of school of psychology that he invented, which he called Lago psychology or Lago therapy. Lago being the Latin for meaning. And it's sort of like, I might be wrong, this is how I read it in high school, but it was sort of like, The search for meaning is the meaning of life kind of thing.
Yeah, what's interesting about this book is that it is one that is taught in both public and religious schools, because it's got a religious message as well, because I think he maintains his faith.
Yeah.
But it's also got that psychological bend, so it kind of like is also appropriate for non-religious schools.
Yeah.
And it's a book that's often taught.
I remember I guess I was depressed, And I was talking to a guidance counselor. I was maybe a freshman in high school. And his guidance counselor was just like, you got to read Man's Search for Meaning. It'll change your life. And I don't think it was in any way directly related to what I was feeling, but it was a great book. But yeah. But I kind of feel a little bit like a phony talking about it because I only read it that once, and that was like 20 years ago. I have little impressions of it. I remember so little of it.
I wonder if you were to read it again now, if it would affect you the same way.
Probably. I probably like it a lot still. But it probably, I think you can only be affected that way once, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Especially I was a high school kid, like reading about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Cause you know, like it's a memoir, like, and it got like into the nitty gritty of things. I'd say one moment that I always remember is he's talking about how you never kind of leave it. And he's talking about I'm paraphrasing cause I'm remembering a memory of a memory, but he talks about like seeing a picture of a Holocaust image and it's like these emaciated people, but they have like shoes on, and the person's like, who shows it to him is like, isn't this horrible? And he goes like, no, but they got shoes, like that's pretty good.
Yeah,
like because he's still like, he's still in that mindset of like if he were in there.
Yeah, I remember you talking to me about it when you were reading it, and I think it was this book. I remember you saying that one of his major like teachings in the book is that like life is hard, and that a lot of times we get ourselves depressed because we convince ourselves that life is supposed to be easy. So if we're experiencing a hard life, then we feel like we're doing something wrong.
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember that, but
I think that's, it's from that book.
I mean, that I feel like a lot of smart philosophies go, that's what the Buddha thought.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, I think, religions and philosophies and psychologies that go by the idea of like, yeah, like you should not expect things to be great,
right?
Like that's will fuck you up.
Yeah. Just last year I taught a class where I did a Holocaust unit, and what I did was, instead of us all reading the same book, I had the kids all choose their own books. Uh-huh. And I gave them a list that they could choose from, and that was one of them. And I had one kid who read it, and he really really loved it. So I've actually never read it, but I know that it's...
You taught a book that you didn't read?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't teach it.
What a charlatan.
It was like what we were doing in class was were texts related to the Holocaust, but then they also had an independent book to read on their own.
Oh, okay.
That they had to write, report back on, and he read that one.
Yeah, I'd like to read it again, but I also, part of me feels like
maybe you won't be as touched.
Yeah, I carry it with me as this little memory.
It might be disappointing,
you know. And you know, going back to what I was saying before about my mental health, I probably started reading a million books in my life, but never finished them. So like, this was a book that I finished young in life, which was like a real fucking outlier.
Yeah. All right, cool. Okay, so my next one is Naked by David Sedaris.
Okay.
And it's, I really don't know if it's specifically Naked. I just put Naked because that's the first one I read. It's really just David Sedaris books in general deserve a spot on my list because it's really, Naked was the first one, but David Sedaris was like the first memoirist I ever read.
Uh-huh.
And he's so funny and he's so brilliant and he's so like, even though I don't think we're anything really alike in his writing, I saw something that reminded me of me.
Me too.
And I guess it's, maybe it's like the neuroticism or whatever. Right,
like smart, but not really that smart. But like, you don't, but like you don't fit in and like, but you, yeah, like,
yeah.
Totally.
And I kind of took away from it like, again, he was the first memoirist I ever read. And now, there's so many memoirs, but at the time it was kind of...
Especially like funny memoirs.
Yeah, so at the time it was kind of more unique, and I remember saying like, this could be the kind of writer I could be.
Right.
And that kind of ushered in like a new way of writing.
Because a million other people
for
thought
myself,
this which, could be the which, kind of writer
which,
I could be.
Which now I think I've since changed again. Like I actually don't write personal essays anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did for a while because of this book.
I feel like as much as I like him...
His later stuff isn't.
Early stuff is better.
So much better. His last few books, I honestly, I'll still always buy his books, but like, The last one was only okay.
Was the last
he's
one
told
the one
all
that
his
was
great
like,
stories. Right. That's the thing.
Was the last one the one that was just like journal entries?
Well, no. Yeah, that's I have that one. No, he released the one that's just journal entries, Theft by Finding. Yeah. And there's actually a second volume of this coming out because this ends in 2001.
Oh, really?
And he's just a person who journals every day and just writes weird little things.
Some of it's interesting. Some of it isn't.
Some of it is so not interesting. So it's a weird one. His last book was Calypso. That was his
last.
Yeah,
I did not read that.
I read it, but I couldn't tell you one story from it. You know, his most interesting stuff is from the first 20 years of his life.
Yeah.
And
because he was like a mess and on drugs and stuff.
Yeah, so it's all interesting.
Now he's like, I'm rich and I live in Paris.
He's rich. He lives in, I think he lives in Amsterdam now. But he's like, he's a weirdo. He like spends his days walking around collecting garbage off the side of the road.
Right, right.
So he's kind of just like a really quirky rich person now.
Yeah.
So it's not as interesting. That's the thing about being a memoirist.
Right, 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 right.
You know, it's like you stop having interesting, relatable stories to tell.
Right, right,
if you're
right, right,
any,
right.
If you do well.
That's the thing about being any kind of artist who, like, reaches popularity by
being open with their own
right,
life.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Like, even someone like Howard Stern, like, when he was, like, the everyman, he was much more interesting and funny, and I was just, like, a rich person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. This is another nonfiction book. Making Movies, The Inside Guide to Independent Movie Production.
Okay, I remember that book.
Yeah, cause I think I made you...
You made me read that book.
I made you read it.
Because for a little while there in high school, I was like, I want to be a filmmaker, and it's really just because you wanted to be a filmmaker, and I didn't have my own identity yet.
Right, right.
And I remember you being like, you'll be my Padawan, and I'll make you be my study. And
this is what it looks like.
Yes, I remember that. You made me take it out of the library at school, and you were like, you got to read this. And I remember being like, I don't want to. And you were like, you have to.
Right.
So I read it.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Making Movies by John Russo, The Inside Guide to Independent Movie Production. So I got this from the library of the high school we went to.
I think we stole it from that library. I don't think we ever returned it.
Really? I read it more than once. But here's what's funny. It was the 1990s. But
it was when you would go to a library to take out a book about how to make movies.
Yeah. But no, but even in the 90s, this book was way out of date.
Oh, yeah. It's from the 80s.
And the book is explaining how to make independent films with actual celluloid film. Like, now it would be like, pick up your phone and make it and put it on YouTube. But he's talking about, like, you know, the chemical process of film, and like, you buy black and white film because it's cheaper by the mileage. And,
oh, my God.
But but even though it was out of date even when I was reading it, I think the pragmatic way in which it was written made me realize that you could make a movie. I think that's what was so exciting to me about it.
What's kind of interesting about it is that, from what I remember, it's kind of like it's pragmatic in the way that it's like a how-to guide, but it's also really riding on that 80s movie magic thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Of like, you can make the movies.
Right, right.
You can make movie magic happen, and here's how.
It's written by the guy who wrote it.
Which is like a bygone era. Right. People don't think that way about movies anymore.
The guy who wrote the book wrote Night of the Living Dead and produced it.
Yeah,
so
I remember
that.
So
he's talking a lot about the experience of making Night of the Living Dead. And I was young, and I wanted to be a filmmaker at that time, and I was, like, falling in love with film. So, like, the idea of, like, oh, my God, you can make a movie, which I think now kids are probably more aware that you can make things. Because, like, I mean, now you can be, like, 12 and be, like, an amazing YouTuber or something.
Yeah.
Or you could make a podcast. Podcasts are the
fucking podcasts. We don't need to hear from
everyone.
It
went from garage bands to, like, independent movies to podcasts.
Yeah.
Like, now podcast is what it is. But it just, the practical way that it talked about, like, how you can do it just, like, blew my mind. Because it was kind of like, you don't need talent. You just got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the, drop out of college and make a movie.
Yeah.
Like, that t-shirt that they used to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was a big book for me.
Okay. My next one is The Shining by Stephen King.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. So this one is an adult book that I have read. I've read it a few times. I read it the first time when I was a kid.
How old?
I was in fifth or fourth grade.
Wow, you must have awful parents.
I have the worst parents. because, and this is kind of why it was a big deal for me, I was really into Goosebumps and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I remember thinking, like, it's time for me to take the next step. I want to read a grown-up scary book.
Grown-up horror.
And it took me a long...
And you went right to The Shining.
I went right to The Shining. It took me a long time to get through, because it's very...
What is it, like 500 pages?
It's like almost 500, I think. And I was also a kid, so I was reading like 5 pages a day. So it took me a long time, but I kept at it. And I remember loving it, and especially like the last third of the book.
Did you get it, though? Did you really get everything that was happening?
I thought I did, but looking back, probably not. I mean, the last time I read it was like 3 years ago, and I actually, the last time I read it kind of was like, this is not as good as
you thought it was when you were
when I was a baby and I read it. Uh-huh. But I remember, it's not even the book itself. It's just the fact that it was like the first adult book that I read. So that when I finished it, I felt like I had conquered
accomplished something.
And I felt like...
And Stephen King is a known name.
Yes. And I'd be like, I read a Stephen King book and it was cool. And then afterwards I read Carrie. And then for a while there, I was just reading like the classic horror novels.
Well, you were in the Stephen King book club.
I was in the Stephen King book club. I still have a lot of those Stephen King books. I read The Exorcist. I was really young reading really scary, really adult themed books.
And
probably not getting them, but enjoying the process. So yeah, that was a big one. The first adult book, the first big boy book I read was that. The first chapter book I ever read all my own was a Goosebumps book.
Really?
That almost
Which
made
one was it?
It was It Came From Beneath the Sink.
Love it.
And then I read a bunch of those.
He
I
would
read
just a bunch fart of, those books out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I read a bunch of Boxcar Children. I liked Encyclopedia Brown.
Awesome.
But anyway, yeah. So that's The Shining. There's not, I mean, I've already, you know, what else is there to say about it?
It's The Shining.
It's The Shining.
People are aware of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So where am I up to? What are we up to?
I have one left.
Oh, I've got one left, too. So I guess I should do an honorable mention.
Oh, this is your.
You know what?
Wait, you did 4 already?
Yeah. Making Movies, Manchester Meeting, How to Catch a Ghost, and Eleanor.
Oh, Park. Yeah. Okay.
You know what? Now that we're at the end of this, I think I've kind of gone in order.
Okay.
I guess just by picking what do I want to talk about now, I think I went through a process of what's the most important to me. So this honorable mention, I don't at all know what the fuck the name of this book is.
That's a big thing for you in this list.
It's a biography of Thomas Edison. I read maybe in the third grade, and it was, you know, and Thomas Edison was a weird, shitty person. So like, it was probably like a little.
He's
kid.
From New Jersey.
Oh, come on now, guys. It was probably like a little kid book. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure I didn't talk about like
a kid's biography.
You're right. I'm sure I didn't talk about his litigious nature. Like, yeah, I'm sure it was just like, and then he did the fucking light bulb.
Yeah.
But I remember just like, we were assigned it for class, but I read on beyond reading in class. And I was reading it when the other kids were like doing math or something.
Oh, that's cool.
Because I was like, wow, this is actually interesting. So that's my honorable mention. I don't know what the fuck, what of the million fucking kid Thomas Edison books I read.
Should I do my honorable mention, or are you going to do your number one, and then I do my honorable mention and number one?
I'll do my number one, then you do your honorable mention, then your number one.
All right.
So my number one is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I had a feeling.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is the, I think it's the first book I ever read on my own. The first book that I bought, I said, oh, that looks interesting. I bought it. Of course, I bought it from Scholastic. We had reading time in fourth grade.
It's the best.
Sustained
silent reading, SSR.
I remember something called Deer.
Deer, drop everything and read.
Yeah.
That's the other one.
I dropped everything and read. And I remember
that was a program where they would, like, in the middle of the day, unannounced, be like, Deer, and you would stop in the middle of a lesson and read for 15 minutes.
Oh, how lovely.
It was so cute.
I was reading, and I had a friend in class named Lila, and she was also reading the book, and we would read the same stories at the same time. And I remember I read the babysitter story, which has the twist ending of the calls coming from inside the house. And I didn't know that fucking the twist ending was a thing that existed. So I was,
you're like, what?
I was like, what? you know, I think the macabre nature of it obviously has had a big effect on my...
You're a real spooky story addict.
Well, you're the one who fucking read Shining as a fucking toddler. So go fuck yourself.
It was a
big thing. It was such a big thing that I went to see the movie that came out last year knowing it was going to be bad.
Yeah.
But I was like, I got to see it. So that's number one. Again, books that changed your life.
absolutely changed trajectory of my life.
Okay, well, that's absolutely great. So my honorable mention, and the reason why I didn't make the list, is because I don't think it really changed my life, but it played a big part in my life, and it's Bossy Pants by Tina Fey.
Okay, I've read that as well.
And the reason why is because for whatever reason, I read the book and I really, really liked it. And then I downloaded the audiobook.
Yeah.
And then it was my first year working full time. And I guess it was just like a huge time in my life where I was like working full time for the first time, getting up every day, going to work, feeling independent, bringing home a paycheck, whatever. Like I really felt like, you know, like your first year working is a big deal. And for whatever reason, I, for like comfort, would listen to the audiobook like almost every day on the way to and from work.
Okay.
So I know passages of that book like by heart, and it's the only book that I like. Can, like, I'll listen to it and I can like recite word, like every word of like whole chapter.
Interesting.
And I just, it's a great book. It's not groundbreaking in any way, but I just, it's read by her. And it's really, I guess it's really the audiobook that I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And it's just, I've just listened that, and although during the same time period, but not as much, I also listened a few times to The Bedwetter by Sarah Silverman. And I just remember like, on my commute to and from work listening to those audiobooks.
I always thought of audiobooks as like not books, but I think that comes well, let me say, I think that comes from a Philistine perspective of like a book is an accomplishment and therefore it's not hard.
Well, I mean, it's two different types of, I mean, one is reading comprehension, the other one is auditory comprehension. Right. So it is two different pathways. But it's the same shit.
I said that while teaching a class, and a student very astutely said to me, "So you don't think a blind person can read a book?"
What a dick you are.
And I was like, wow. Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
and I was like, you're right. I was like, you're right. It's coming from a weird maybe insecurity that I have where it's like it's not real or whatever.
It is two different.
Also, I can't do it. I've tried and I can't pay attention.
Well, here's the thing. It is two different types of reading. I would say that it does count as reading. It is two different types though, cuz a person can have like reading disabilities but can successfully listen to an audiobook and be fine, and vice versa. But I will say I like audiobooks in the way that I like podcasts, where like I can tune in and out. So I only listen to audiobooks of books that I've already read.
Okay.
I can't listen to a new book as an audiobook. All right. So that was my honorable mention. My number one is Up the Down Staircase by Bell Kaufman.
Okay.
So this book, of all the books that like I would say changed my life, this one really, really changed my life. It's so weird. It's a book from the 60s that was a pretty big hit when it came out. And then it was turned into a movie a couple years later with Sandy Dennis.
The incomparable Sandy Dennis.
It's about a young English teacher who starts teaching at a high school in New York in like a rough school. And she has a really – it's like the classic formula like every movie since then has copied. But like, this was the original. Where like
minds.
Yes, she goes there, she has a rough time, she doesn't know if this is for her, she contemplates quitting, but then eventually she falls in love with it and she's embraced by the students.
Yeah.
That book really changed my life because for whatever reason my friend was reading it. My friend worked in the library at the time and he was reading it, and he was like, "Oh, you should read this book. It's pretty weird and pretty old, but like it's good." And I was a senior in high school and I was thinking about like what I really wanted to do as a career, because I started to feel like maybe I don't want to be a writer or maybe I don't want to be a journalist, but I do want to be within that world. So I feel like this book just came along at the exact right time, and that book really made me feel like I think I could be a teacher. And then I remember talking to my AP English teacher at the time and being like, "Have you ever read this book?" And she was like, "Yes, I've read it." And it's, I remember her saying like, "It's amazing how not much has changed from the 60s. And it's, you know, she had read it. And I remember saying like, "This book is really making me think like maybe I might want to be a teacher." And then I did become a teacher. So I credit this book to.
So it really did change your life.
Yeah. I credit this book with even introducing that idea to me.
Interesting. Wow.
So yeah, that's what, my number one.
Your friend said it was weird. What does that mean?
Like it was, it's
because you're a kid and it's just a thing.
It's an epistolary novel. Like it's all written in the form of like intra office memos and like announcements from the main office and like student work and like student essays in response to her questions, and those are funny. And her like diary entries and stuff like that. But I remember him saying like, "Oh, this is like a good book, but it's like unique. Like it's got a unique style." Mm. And I just like remember immediately loving it and being like, oh, like I could see myself like doing this, and I never thought that that would be me, but maybe I could do this, and then I did. So
have you read it since then?
Yes, I have read it since then. I've read, and I have your, like, this is the paperback that I have, but I also bought like a first print edition that's up there on the top shelf. So I've read it a few times, and it's also really funny. She also, while I was at Hunter, she came to Hunter and did like a lecture.
Was she an actual teacher?
She was an actual teacher. She was a New York City teacher. Uh-huh. She actually taught into her 90s.
Whoa.
And I think she actually went to Hunter.
She couldn't afford to retire, I bet.
Yeah. She came and she taught like a class on like writing humor.
Interesting.
She's really awesome. And the book is really good. And it changed the trajectory of my life.
Amazing.
And that's my number one.
So the important thing is to read, guys. Drop everything and read.
Reading is fun and fundamental. Remember Reading Rainbow, guys?
Yeah.
Do you listen to that podcast?
No, I don't.
I've heard it's great.
LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton reads.
I said I never wanted to meet LeVar Burton.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite bits on Community. And I love that they keep wondering, like, what he loves him from. Is it from Star Trek? And then you hear him in the bathroom, like, butterfly in the sky.
Yeah.
I could fly twice as high. And it's, he loves him from Reading Rainbow.
Are you going to eat that salmon? LeVar Burton. Everyone, this has been PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with Anthony Bongiorno. You can find PCMC anywhere podcasts are available.
Mike just made a face for those of you listening.
Hashtag PCMC pod. Yeah. We end every episode by quoting the animated series Muppet Babies Animal.
And he says, go bye-bye.